from Knockadoon to Ardmore. So much to do and see. Mike Brooks, our resident historian, back with us again. Due to public demand.
Due to public demand.
Mike, I know whenever you're on, we get a huge feedback.
Ah, that's brilliant, yeah.
Huge feedback, but it's really, it's local history.
Yeah. But and do you know something, Noel? That's like, even for me, because this is, you know, we keep saying it as well. There's just so much here, you know, and it's not, and I know it's not me that they're listening. It is the history of the area that's, you know, it catches me, because I keep saying to everybody, you know, when I'm kind of researching this as well, I learn so much about the area as well, Noel. It's absolutely fantastic. I love it. We've so much history around the whole area anyway.
We have, and
brilliant.
The title is very apt. So much to do and see. And now this week, I suppose we're basically looking at, I suppose you could say, a well-loved item.
Absolutely,
here in Kinyall.
Yeah.
And indeed, when I say item, actually, I mean that, I suppose, really, it's more than an item. It was part of our heritage. We're talking about the railway, Yall to Cork Railway.
We are, and you know, Noel, we kind of say, we always say the clock 8, you know, as a marker in Yall, the clock 8. Second one is the lighthouse. You could really say the third one is the railway station. It's still there, so close. You can see it from everywhere when you're on the Strand as well. Absolutely fantastic, you know, the way. So it is. And I kind of knew little about it, to be honest with you. And this is where I was kind of looking forward to doing this bit, because it's kind of, I suppose, you know, what we want to do is start at the start of it. How the railway became, you know, from Yall to Cork, and why, and all this kind of thing. And sorry about the dates. We are always going into a few dates as well. But it was a very interesting story, to be honest with you, Noel. So it'd be great to say, kind of tell you a bit more about it.
Yes, and to tell the listeners a bit more about it. We all have a little bit of knowledge, I suppose, of the railway. And like, it's so, like, when we were growing up, it was so familiar to us.
Well, do you know, and I suppose a lot of people, no, young people won't know, you know the way, but a lot of people have a lot of stories about it. You know,
yes.
There's so many stories.
Yes.
People have different stories. There was a very good story, actually. Sorry, I was listening to you, and I can't remember the guy's name. He was on about it, but he was saying about how up in Clancy's Bar, little Johnny came in, Dad, come on, you'll miss the train. And he says, I won't miss the train because I'm sitting beside the train driver.
Yeah. And we're drinking. It was kind of a right there, Mike, today. You're right, like, the West, you know,
a real Irish.
The West Clare Railway, you know. It was something like that, you
absolutely.
Know. But when you think of it, actually, it was, and as it was a very, very important service for Yall, number one. And indeed, our industries that were here at the time, our Yall carpets, and indeed Yall shades, Yall pottery, so many local industries availed of the service.
But you're right, and you know something? I didn't even think about that until kind of we were talking about it and I did it a bit more. Like, the people remember all the people coming down. You know the way the people came down to the Strand and the beach and all this?
Yes.
And everybody has their memories of that. But they forget the main money was in the cargo, you know, the way transporting, because back in the 1800s, you didn't have the big trucks, the Arctic trucks nowadays.
True.
So you had the railway, and the railway, this is where they made their money. And it's a bit like Stena Line and Irish Ferries going back and forth. You know, we think we're transporting us over for our little holidays and all that. It's the trucks that are inside. That's where the money, you know, is being made. And same with the railways as well.
And of course, as well as that, we mustn't forget the agricultural side of it, the beet transportation.
100%, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was it did a huge amount of, you know, the way. So the carriages were one thing, you know, for the passenger, but it was the cargo that they carried.
It was the cargo that made the money, I suppose, for CIE.
Unbelievable. You know? I liked it was brick and everything, you know, the way you all brick and all that. And we'll get into a few bits of it as well.
Yes.
But, you know, I'll start at the very start.
Good place to start, as the song says.
Because,
yes.
You know, people wonder, how old is the railway, I suppose, out there as well.
Yes.
Now, what it was the rights to build the line from Cork to Yall was established by law, in 1854, right?
1854, yeah.
So you think of it, this is just after the famine. Again, there was a lot of famine kind of relief things, and I'd say there was a lot of kind of things that were brought in fairly quickly after the famine to give people, because the famine didn't just end. The famine was there for a long time afterwards as well. And, you know, just to give relief to people as well anyway. But what happened was the rollout of the Cork to Youghal railways, typical even today, like, but it seemed threatened by legal and financial obstacles since inception. However, in spite of, you know, many false starts, I suppose, and much scepticism from his observers, the main journey over the tracks from to Youghal took place on the 23rd of May, 1860.
So it took 6 years, I suppose, for the legal wranglings and just the objections. And I suppose, even then, you still, I suppose, had some form of compulsory purchase with farmers, I suppose, and there that kind of thing. So there was a lot of obstacles.
Well, there would have been, and especially from Cork, you know, the way, all the ways, because it's not, you know, the way you Killa, Middleton, Carrigtwohill, all that kind of, you have to go through all the lands up there as well.
I suppose the important thing, too, to remember that it was billed as Cork Youghal Railway.
Absolutely.
Because Middleton was only basically
Middletown.
A small stop.
Yeah, well,
a tiny stop. It was only a small village, practically near the major town of Youghal.
That's right. Because it was, and the major port of Youghal as well.
Obviously,
there was still kind of transport from the ships were still coming in as well at that stage.
Yes.
But what they said was, fully enough, like we'll say, we were saying 1854 was the law was passed.
Yes.
But the connection to our coastal town of Youghal to Cork was originally intended to be achieved as early as 1845. So this would have been famine times as well. So obviously the tinking was going on for many years before. And
it was probably in conjunction, I suppose. And I suppose a lot of the railways around the British Isles, because we were part of the Britain at the time, would be constructed around that time. So, and Youghal was an important port for the British.
Well, it was, but what the 1845 thinking at the time, Noel, was that it was the Cork to Waterford railway. So the railway was going to come, Youghal, and then
it was going to go on to
that was the
talk. That was the ultimate plan.
So to bring it
to Dungarvan, maybe. And of course you had the railway then
in Dungarvan.
Well, so you'd be Dungarvan to Waterford.
Yeah, you'd be joining up then with Waterford then as well with the Dungarvan one, which was there already.
Right.
I think the Dungarvan was there as well at that stage. But and just we'll say we were talking about the lighthouse as well being a focal point in Youghal, and we did this before with the lighthouse as well, because what it says was in the 1860s there was three unsuccessful attempts by various railway companies to acquire some of your lighthouse grounds. Remember that they wanted to bring extend the railway line into the centre of Youghal and possibly onto Dungarvan from Youghal. But at the time they were rejected by the ballast board, which was the lighthouse owners, we'll call it.
Right.
So they said, no, you're not having, because the railway running beside such a building might, you know,
undermine it, whatever it was.
So they didn't. But do you know something, Noel? You can imagine the trains coming in now. First of all, there would have been a lot of noise, steam, you know, the way.
These were actually
steam trains.
Yeah.
But I was trying to think about it then, because we were talking about there bringing that train then straight to Dungarvan. But how would you cross like we were saying, throw a bridge over to the ferry point. But think of it, all the shipping was still coming in the 1860s. Youghal was a very successful harbour with a lot of shipping coming in, you know, behind the Carpets, where the Carpets was now. So unless you had a huge suspension type bridge, or you know the way, because even the bridge outside is high, the bridge we have, a concrete bridge out in outside there near Outsella, but still you can't get any ships inside it, you know what I mean?
It wouldn't be high enough for the big schooners to go to Killala or these places.
Absolutely.
Like that. Correct me if I'm wrong now, but the bridge, the old metal bridge, the one with the barrels, as we all know, that was 1880, wasn't
that
it?
That was around 1880. Say 1878 it started, I think.
There was a timber bridge before that. So it would envisage, I suppose, again, some form of suspension bridge.
They must have, because there was no way, it's so flat. You know the way from here to Ferry Point is just too flat for any type of bridge. So to carry a, so I could see why there was a big obstacle there straight away of crossing, we'll say, the Blackwater, because...
Yeah, and I do know at one stage, actually, the idea was mooted way back in the 1850s, when these plans were going ahead, to do what they did in Cork. As you know, they burrowed through the hill in Cork.
That's right,
there was plans to burrow go through Knockaverry and come out on that side. And I think that one would be the time that I suppose they were talking to, we'd say, Irish Lights at the time or whatever the case may be. So there was a lot of plans, I suppose, thrown up in the air at the time. And
well, do you know, I'd say, and as you said, there was three unsuccessful attempts, we'd say, to buy some of the land off the lighthouse, because it was all these companies, you know, we just think of like CIE today.
But they were
all
private companies.
But they were all private companies. Yes. They were all investors.
You know, of course,
the whole thing was all about investors coming in.
Same with the electricity at the time, electricity companies at the time. They were all private investors.
That's right.
And no regulation, nothing at all.
And loads of people with loads of money as well.
Exactly. That's
a waste.
It was. Yeah.
But, but what they said was the company that built and operated the railway initially was the Cork and Youghal Railway. So it was, if you look at all these kind of old signs, they were always kind of abbreviated. So it was the CNYR, Cork and Youghal Railway. But the Cork and Youghal Railway was forced into administration within a few short years due to bankruptcy of a major shareholder, a guy called David Leopold Luce. And he was taken over by the much larger then company called the Great Southern and Western Railway, the GS and WR.
Yes.
You know, we have still...
We still have the paraphernalia of the GSW. We still have that.
And we have the Great Southern Hotels.
Exactly.
They were always the Great Southern Hotels as well, you know, in Killarney and all these different places. And they're still called the Great Southerns, you know, the way. So it was... So they owned the hotel that was beside the railway station. So it was now the GS and WR instead of the Cork and Youghal. So David Leopold Luce, he was a bit of we know him, you know, the way, still to this day in Youghal anyway, especially because he was a financier from Dublin, or from London, and had grand plans to turn Youghal into the Brighton of Ireland. You know, the Brighton in England.
Yes,
beautiful,
of course.
Kind of place. And he wanted to make a resort out of it, but not only buying most of Cork and Youghal Railway shares, so he bought up kind of all the Cork and Youghal shares, he acquired a pleasure steamer for trips up the River Blackwater. He wanted to bring people down from Cork and from everywhere, get them into Youghal, then you bring them up to Cappoquin and all these different places up on his own steamer.
And I do know that there is a publication out going back to that time by, I would imagine, by David Leopold Luce, because it basically what it did, it was like for all the world, like a board fault of brochure.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a book. And it was actually described the journey down to Youghal and up the river by steamer by the one company.
Go way out of it.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'd love to see that, actually. Yeah. If you ever come across it, I'll definitely take it off you as well.
And there was a couple of, actually, pictures in it. And a funny thing, actually, there was a picture, I know we're deviating now a little bit, but there was a picture actually taken of the Grand Parade.
Yeah.
Right? And beyond the Grand Parade, there was nothing but trees and cattle and fields.
Go in Cork?
In Cork, yeah.
Yeah,
river.
Yeah.
Do you know the river?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other side of the Lee was just all cattle, cows, and that whole lot.
So it just shows how quickly it moved on. Yeah.
So, as I said, this David Leopold Luce, obviously, you know, he was a clever man.
He was a very clever marketing man. I know we're coming up to the end of his one, but I still admire him, you know, he was a chancer, but he was a very clever man as well. Mm-hmm. He even actually, do you know what, he even bought, we'll say, most of the town of Youghal from William Cavendish, the 7th Duke of Devonshire, in 1861. Now, when I say boy, you know the way, he can't just walk into the houses because what he was buying was the leases.
Well, the leases of the land.
And rent books and all that kind of stuff as well. So, but still, he owned it, would say, nearly the town of Youghal then at that stage. Where did he live? He lived in the college up there, you know, the French Convent, as we call it today.
Well, the Enterprise Centre, he was up there.
Boyle's house, you know, Richard Boyle's house.
Yeah.
And then he built houses near Clay Castle, which he called Louisville. So we know, we still know, I would have always grown up knowing Louisville, the Strand House.
The Strand House.
All the rows of houses was always called Louisville. I actually checked now just to see, could I see any sign? And I think there was a sign up as you're driving up, you know, from the railway station, from, you know, come around there, and Clancy's Bar, kind of, you're passing there, you're heading up. I thought there was a sign on the gable end of the wall saying Louisville, but I looked the other day, I was passing a couple of times just to see, could I see it again? But that whole row was called Louisville.
No, the road that you're talking about now would be the, we'd call it...
Claycastle Road.
The Strand buildings.
Yeah.
As, yeah.
Yeah. Going up to Clare Castle, going up to the swim pool.
All the houses there.
All the houses on your right hand side there. Just at the end of Clare Castle at the
at our side. It seemed to ring a bell when you said Lewisville. That certainly rings a bell with locals around.
Because the other side then is Williamstown. McCurtainstown would be Williamstown.
Yeah,
Williamstown.
Yeah.
But that was Lewisville anyway, and Strand House. And then, but like they made him out to be a lovely man, but seemingly there was cottages there at the Strand, and he evicted all the poor tenants to build his beautiful house.
Yes.
But the houses are still there, you know, the way, right beside the railway track as well.
Yes, yes.
They said even he was such a generous man, Noel. He gave 100 tons of coal and blankets to the needy, and he was thought to be the saviour of the town. He probably, the people he evicted that he gave it to. But as per always in this town, seemingly, unfortunately for y'all, this fairy tale was soon to end. Lewis himself forgot to mention that he'd been in jail in Lancaster in 1852 for not paying debts. And on his release, he was soon arrested again for a similar crime. So in 1855, so he was in jail in 1852. In 1855, possibly on the run, which I believe, he came to Ireland and became a financial advisor for the Cork and Youghal Railway.
You took the words out of my mouth to tell the numbers. How many times, like if we're talking about history repeating itself,
unbelievable.
How many times have we seen this, you know, saviours coming into the town, my goodness, and
this is we're going to change everything, you know, we've the elections going on at the moment, and we're going to make changes, you know.
Oh, really? Yes.
But what they said was, because he came in and he had a lot of neck, this guy, and this is why I like the guy, he had a huge neck. And they said a lot of his Lewis's transactions were actually taken as face value. So when they eventually looked into Lewis's financial affairs, it has to come, it's like a pyramid scheme, like it has to come to an end. Basically, he had nothing.
He had nothing at the end.
Absolutely
of the
nothing. Yeah. Sure, he was in jail 2 or 3 years before that, you know, the way for
But listen, you got to admire his neck, as you say.
Absolutely.
So, you got to admire his neck.
What they said was the Cork and Youghal Railway now had debts of nearly £1 million back in 1860s. So you can imagine how much that was nowadays in fairness to it.
Yes.
With no means to pay, because the guy had nothing. And once again, he declared bankruptcy. What they said was Lewis himself died in 1867, leaving lawyers several years of work trying to repair some of his financial dealings. So, and I just want to say, Noel, I took all that from David Leopoldo. I have it here in my hand, the little book of y'all, Kieran Gregor.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I cannot praise that publication highly enough. It's absolutely amazing.
Do you know, it's one of these little ones you could just sit down, read 5 minutes, walk away, come back, and there's another story.
It's an amazing book.
And I have it there. It's fantastic. Kieran is fantastic, all the little stories. But just kind of, I suppose, the history at a glance, you know, the way it
is,
because obviously it's been there for a long while. Mm. And I'm going to read this first to you, Noel, and then I'll kind of go back and explain it a small bit. So what it said was, on the 10th of November, 1859, saw the Dunkettle to Middleton section of the line. So y'all bit didn't open fully until 1860.
Funny how things happen.
Same thing.
Yeah, the Dunkettle to Middleton.
Middleton, yeah.
Opened, yeah, back in the
1859. Yeah. And then what they said was the section line was open to traffic. Passengers were conveyed the 2 miles from King Street, now McCurtain Street in Cork, to Dunkettle by horse omnibus. Now, the omnibus is like that tram that's pulled by the horse. Now, I'll get back to that as well. And it says then, from the 1st of October 1860 until May 1861, a temporary way was laid to the new terminus at Cork, so the train station. But it wasn't a train station. It was a train station, a station called Summerhill. And
Summerhill was
a train.
Kent Station is now
very close to it, and that's what I'll say here was because what it says was Summerhill was passing over the station, actually was passing over the tunnel which is still used of the Dublin Main Line, and convenient to the GS and WR Penrose Station, which is now Kent Station.
Yes.
Carriages on this section were hauled by French Flemish horses. So what used to happen, so I'll go back a small bit there. Right, they didn't start in Cork. So the railway didn't start in Cork.
It started on Dunkettle Roundabout. What was the reason for it?
And there's a couple of reasons for it, actually. And we'll say I'll get onto that now as well. And what they said was they started working kind of, they did the Dunkettle to Middleton, then they were kind of working on the Yall bit then as well. But on the other side, they were working backwards, because think of it, the land from Dunkettle, first of all, it was tidal, right? So there was a lot of...
A lot of reclaimed
lands. And then there was a lot of cliff. And now, just to go back to the Summerhill bit, the Summerhill station... Anybody remembers driving into Cork back in the olden days? There was the Cork Dry Gin sign, and that was directly over the tunnel. There was always a big sign. I actually checked it out. There's some other beer or something like that. I don't know at the moment. You can see it. But if you look, that was always the Dublin Tunnel. That, where that sign was Summerhill Station. So what you did was, you can see the steps if you're passing the railway station today.
Yes.
There's actually steps going up a small bit, and then there's actually a walkway up over
old
railway. That was the railway station. That was Summerhill Railway Station. But it was right next door, so you had to kind of come off that one,
cross over
the road, and then you're into, we'll say, what it was at Penrose. It was called Penrose Station. Now we call it Kent Station. So they were side by side, except the roadway was in it. But if you're coming into Cork now, remember, you have, there's the big wooden bridge. You know, when you come in along and you have to turn down to the docks, that there's a big bridge, or metal bridge over you.
The metal bridge. Before you turn down to the quay.
So that was kind of built afterwards then.
Yes.
To bring you straight into Kent Station from there then at that stage. But what they said was the carriages were, and the section, were hauled by Flemish horses. So what the train used to come up as far as, we'll say, from Middleton or whatever it was at the time, and even from Yall, because this was going on for longer than the Yall was opened at that stage.
Yes.
And what they said was, they unhitched the carriages from the train, and was it 6 Flemish horses, huge horses, and they pulled it up. First, it was a kind of a temporary lane, and then there was tracks put down then at that stage afterwards as well. But what they said was, there was 2 temporary stations, really. You know, the way we think of Yall to Cork.
So
the Dunkettle was the first of the stations from Dunkettle to Yall.
Yes.
And then the second station then was the Summerhill Station to Yall. And then, we were saying why it was there. And really the reason, the engineering works to bring the line to Dunkettle to Kent Station was huge, absolutely huge.
Of course, as we said, like, it was a lot of that is all... Tidal, reclaimed land.
Reclaimed, and then the cliff. You know the way?
So the cliff and the other
the
side.
Water, and it was just pure cliff. If you look at it even today, you can see...
They had to hack the cliff down. The cliff was very... Yeah, if you look at it there, where the old Twiggs Radio School, I think, was up there on the right-hand side.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the left-hand side is the entrance to the dock, to the harbour masters.
That's right.
The cliff is...
But what they did was, if you're going to do something like this in the big engineering works and all that kind of thing, there's only one man you can call. And it's not Superman, by the way, and it's not anybody like that. Isambard Kingdom Brunel. Isambard Kingdom Brunel.
The small fellow with the big hat. He was one of the leading engineers.
He was, and he was. I think it was mainly from the Dunkettle bit to... back into Summerhill, because the rest of it away from Yall to Dunkettle wasn't bad. You know, it was flat lands and all that kind of stuff as well, so it's an easy one. But he was brought in for that bit. He was born in Portsmouth in the 9th of April 1806. His father was Mark Isambard Brunel, a very famous engineer himself. French, he was from France, and his English mother was Sophie Kingdom. So that's where, I didn't realise that's where he got the Kingdom.
So that's where the Kingdom came from.
Brunel, double barrel name. Brunel himself, he learnt a lot from his father and worked for several years on the Thames Tunnel, still open today.
Yes.
Carrying the underground, the underground railway.
Yes.
And he was an assistant engineer under his father for most of his, the youth in his 20s, early 20s. Yeah. What they said was, it was only in 1831, when Brunel was 24 years of age, he took his first project of his own, which was the Clifton Suspension Bridge in Bristol. I was very lucky. I actually passed over that bridge. Made a point to pass over that bridge last week.
My goodness,
£1. It cost you £1 to get across it. But the views. So I parked up the other side, walked back over it. Absolutely fantastic. His name is all over the bridge. But the bridge actually, I believe, speaking to a few people in Bristol at the time, was it was built, it didn't finish again, legal reasons, financial reasons, and different things again. They finished it up after his death, you know the way. So it took a long time to, so he, and what happened was, I just said it there, he was doing the tunnel and seemingly there was an accident at the tunnel and the tunnel flooded. But he was badly injured at the same accident and he was knocked unconscious and he broke a lot of things. He went to Bristol to recuperate and he was looking up and he said, you know what, I could do something about that, you know the way. So
the minds of these fellas think
absolutely. And in his lifetime, we'll say what they said was Brunel constructed nearly 1,200 miles of rail, including tracks in Ireland, Italy and Bengal. So obviously all over UK as well. He's famous for UK.
And of course, the empire at the time, I suppose, Bengal, the whole lot. If you look at today in India, it's nothing but railways.
It's still there.
And it goes back to the legacy of the British and our friend Brunel.
Absolutely. And like what it is, okay, he built the railway, but then he had to build all the associated tunnels, bridges, roads that went with that as well. He had then not only was it the Great Eastern,
the Great
Western,
Eastern, the cable laying one,
and then the Great Britain. And again, I'm very lucky to say, I shouldn't say this because my boss is probably listening. He listens to the podcast. Good morning, Lee.
Morning, Lee.
And he built the Great Britain. And the Great Britain is in Bristol as well.
Oh, is it?
And I was on it again last week.
So I
went all over, spoke to all the guys. They're a fantastic team. And it brings kind of me back down to the Kathleen MA, because this is, it was like a living museum as well. You know,
a lot of things
around it. That's what we wanted to do with the Kathleen MA. I'm not ruling that out yet anyway.
Big loyal, as they say. Big loyal, you'd never know.
And you know, Brunel himself was only, he was just over 5 foot tall. And what it was, he always was worried about he wouldn't be taken seriously because of his height, and often tried to appear taller by sitting up straight, especially when riding a horse. And and you can see photographs of this as well, and by wearing a very tall hat, as you just said.
He had a very tall hat, like. And of course, he was no stranger to y'all.
He wasn't. And he said, because this was the story we brought up before as well. And what I believe is, what they were saying was, the Devonshire Arms was the coach house.
Yes.
And I think he was staying in the Devonshire Arms. Obviously, when his time was over in Ireland, you know, it'd be nice to come down, because the railway would have been running to y'all at that stage for him.
Yes.
So he would have been down at the Devonshire Arms, and there was a pump just outside the Dev. Do you know where the pumps, the petrol pumps,
Yeah.
So there would have been a pump there, and if you look at the maps, it's there. You know, the pump is there.
Yeah.
And there was a story about him coming out, and he was waiting for the coach to probably bring him back to Cork. And what they said was, there was a few old ladies couldn't get the pump working. They were very, you know, the way, no taps back in the old days. And he came out and he took off the coat and he started working. And then the coach came along and he says, I'll catch the next one. And he walked away until he fixed the pump. So that was Brunelism.
Good man, Brunel.
In your life, you know the way. So fair juice to him.
On that point, Mike, we leave it for this week because we've fast run out of time. It's an absolutely fascinating story. We've covered, we've covered part one right up to Brunel's time.
Brunel's time.
And indeed, next week, we'll be getting a little bit more, I suppose, how the railway, the railway housing, the sidings and all these were constructed.
Absolutely.
And of course, we'll be talking about coming on to the present day, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Okay,
thanks,
Mike,
Noel.
Great to see
thanks,
you.
Everybody.
And indeed, we'll talk to you next week.